Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Is it a myth still? I think we've done this. I don't know if I'm a myth. I'm right here. You can come and see me live streaming.
You can see him every day on the screen. So many places you can see him.
Oh, man. Good to see you, Eric.
Good to see you, too.
Yeah.
We've got a new fresh 100. You know, we're falling into this Monday routine.
Yeah, right? You're killing it. And I'm excited to hear the name of the list today. I'm excited to hear the theme of all our tiers. We've got an extra tier or two this time. We got some mini tiers in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm excited to talk about it all.
Yeah. Thank you for the compliment. I would just like to point out that I'm coming off a doozy where I didn't miss a single tier name.
The pressure's on now.
We're running hot right now. So we're feeling pretty good. A little full from Passover brisket, but we're gonna power through this. I will tell you the theme. I draw a lot of inspiration from themes from my life and my son, who is obsessed with trains and buses. And so we're doing modes of transportation for the theme. Each tier will be a different mode of transportation.
Okay.
Feel free to really just go, scooter, electric scooter, bike, rickshaw.
Trust me, you don't need to worry about my ability to really run.
I have ridden a camel before. Does count as a mode of transportation. Absolutely. Just really kind of go out there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to dive right in. You got anything you want to announce at the top?
Well, I just want to say, hey, everybody. Thanks for being here. And go to playback.tv/pitchless and hang out with me on the stream.
Yeah. It's important to know Nick is here. He's happy. It doesn't matter what happened to Cole Reagan's last start. Life goes on.
I watched every single pitch of that. By the way, if you guys are wondering, like, Plus Pitch podcast over the weekend, I'm starting to not do them as much. So the roundup and the streamers, of course, express all my thoughts, including that Cole Reagan start. And he's in tier one. We can jump in there. Yes. I'll go in.
We'll do that. The roundups are so good too. But we are going to get into that tier one that has Cole Reagan's in it. It starts with number one, Corbin Burns, and number two, Zach Wheeler. New number three, Tyler Glasnow. And new number four, Freddie Peralta. Number five, Luis Castillo. Number six, Pablo Lopez. Number seven, Cole Reagan's. Number eight, Tarek Skubal. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
Okay, so I have a couple thoughts here about which, you know, what really should be the one. I'm going to say train is just always there for you.
We differentiate subway or like train?
Oh, yeah, no, this is going to be subway. Okay. And this is like all reliable, always there for you. You know exactly when it's going to be there, how long it's going to take. This is like good quality, cheap. It's there. The train in New York City is one of the best parts about New York City. You don't have the same risk of injury like it is a car. It's great. It's wonderful.
Sure. Unless there's a sick passenger or.
Yeah. But I'm just saying like the ideal utopia train.
Sure.
Is this tier.
Yes. Love me some European trains. Gotta say. Smooth, efficient, clean, beautiful. European subways. Sorry.
I mean, it's only with fascism, of course. That makes sure that the trains run on time.
Sure. Of course, that's what it is. We started talking about Cole Reagan. So let's just continue now that we're talking about tier one. You watched that whole start.
Yes. And you guys know me. I try as hard as I can to be unbiased. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Cole Reagan's. And I keep saying it like that because I believe in it. And you've also heard me in the past be in on a guy and then change a tune when I'm like, you know what? I'm seeing something that I really disagree with. I feel an internal conflict. I'm watching this with Reagan's. I did note that there are certain flaws that came to light in this one. One, slider is only 10% usage this year and hasn't been as a weapon as it was last year that got me so excited. If you guys remember, he learned that slider when he went to the Royals in the minor leagues. He learned it on his own, really. And that turned him into that unicorn pitcher a lot. And it hasn't been there for him. And in this start, not one of his hits were on fastballs. He allowed all these foul balls as the Orioles battled against him, and it forced him to get his outs on changeups and cutters in curves and honestly struck out guys with his four seamer, but those pitches let him down a ton. Now there were some changeups out of the zone that somehow like Adley Rutschman got that one and down. And I believe it was either Henderson or someone else that got another. I can't remember. They're all amazing on the Orioles, so I forget who they are. But they went and got one. It was like stuff like that. Fine. But there were a lot of pitches that were just mistakes that they took advantage of. Now he's not going to have a 900 BABIP every time. And when you face a team like the Orioles, they're a team that actually might exploit those weaknesses, while other teams that Reagan's going to face for every other game in the year, it won't be as tough as that. But he did give himself the ability to get singled out as he did. And there's something to be said about that. Well, Glasnow and Peralta are just dope and make us feel dope. And I'm kind of throwing injury stuff to the wind at this point because everybody gets injured and I'm just kind of sick and tired of it. So like, you know what, Glasnow and Peralta, you guys are just so dang good. You deserve to be up here.
So was this more, I mean, because listen, I've been getting a lot of questions prior to that Coors start about like Luis Castillo and should we drop him? Should we be worried? And obviously drop my answer to that is no. I mean, listen, people wanted to drop Bryce Harper at some point. Like people are crazy. And there are people who want to drop everybody. But there was a lot of like, how concerned should we be? I know that we've always preached patience, in particular with somebody like Luis Castillo, who has a noted history of starting the season a little bit slow and then needing to kind of ramp up. So what was Glasnow and Peralta moving ahead of him? This is more about them looking good than you feeling any sort of
100%. Concern. Not to mention two straight starts of Castillo being great. So like, I'm not concerned about Castillo. Right. It's just what Glasnow and Peralta are doing are like SP1, you know? Yes. So
I felt like that needed to be said because he was somebody that
absolutely. Same with people Lopez really concerned too. About. And you see him, oh man, minus three is at six now. You realize that like Castillo was ahead of him in my preseason ranks, I believe. Right. And, or they're like, either like right neck and neck and anyway. And Castillo looks so good the last two. Well, Lopez, I talked about on the craft with Eno. Even though he had a good start last time, Pablo Lopez's fastball command is still a little bit wonky. So there's reasons why we do this. And again, all the stuff with the list, as you guys have heard for years with me, it's all about little changes in the list, not big swooping ones in the top 20, top 30.
Sure. And there's no changes in the next year. We'll get to that in a second.
Not at all.
My question is, my last question, what was your reaction to the Dodgers letting Glasnow go 8 innings in a 10-0 game, given his prior history of arm issues? Were you like, cool, they're letting him go. This is not like a five and dive Dodgers thing. Or were you like, this game is out of hand. Like, this is the perfect start to just let him go 6.
No, I'm a big fan of like, I don't know. We've stopped breeding these guys that can go 100 anymore. And if we go 90, that means we're just going to leave him at 90. Like, you have to push the body to be able to form any sort of resilience. I don't know. I know it sounds weird because like pitching is attrition and all this kind of stuff too. I get that. But it's, you know, with all strength, it's all about pushing and healing. And I'm cool with it. Like, they're going to need Glasnow to go 100 pitches this year. So, okay.
I thought it was a really clear way to break from that narrative where everybody was like, well, it's Glasnow and he's on the Dodgers. And so he's going to go 4 innings and 5 innings and they're going to him. And it's like, well, clearly not. If he's feeling it, they're going to let him go.
And also, I mean, they're not like 20-4 or something right now.
Right. Yeah. They're struggling right now. Well, struggling for
relatively. Yeah.
So tier number 2 starts with starting pitcher number 9, Logan Webb. Number 10, George Kirby. Number 11, Zach Gallen. Number 12, Kevin Gausman. Number 13, Max Fried. Number 14, Aaron Nola. Number 15, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number 16, Joe Ryan. Number 17, Grayson Rodriguez. And number 18, Zach Eflin. What's this tier called? And why is it called that?
So this is like the exit row of a coach flight.
Okay.
Because this is better than everything else and it's going to work. It's like, I feel good. But man, one day I just want to be in business class. I just want that first class experience. Mm-hmm. And like, no, this is great. This is like, I'm an ace. I'm standing out. I'm awesome. But you just want it to be that first class guy.
Here's my hot take on exit rows. I know. And I say this as somebody who is 6'3", like 240 pounds. I don't believe that people should be judged by their appearance, except if they want to sit in an exit row.
I've never paid for it.
And I think if this row is meant to help save people in the event of an emergency, you shouldn't just be able to nod and say yes, but you should look like somebody who could help people in the case of emergency. And I'm going to make clear that is not a gender thing. Women, by all means, should sit in the exit row. I just mean, like, I have been on some planes where, like, the people who've paid for exit row seats are like 90 something year old people who can barely walk down the aisle. And I'm thinking, I should be in the seat. If you asked everybody on the plane in the event of emergency, who would you rather have in this row? I think that most people wouldn't pick the 90 year old man who can't walk down the aisle. And so
it is kind of convoluted, isn't it?
Like, the only time that I believe in prejudice is like the exit row doesn't matter except when it does. And you really hope the right people are sitting in it if it does matter.
Well, the row for comfort, those that need comfort, should not be the one that requires energy.
Shouldn't.
That makes all the sense, right?
The reason that it's an exit row, the reason it's a larger row, is not so that you can be comfortable in it. It's in the event of an emergency, we need a row that has the door and that people can get through and get out of. So that shouldn't be the run where you pay extra money to sit there so that you can be comfortable. That goes against the whole purpose of the row. Anyway,
that's incredible. And yeah, these guys don't have as much energy as tier one.
Yeah, I digress. No changes, as I mentioned before. Is there anybody specifically that you want to address?
You know, I do want to mention, like, I wrote it in the notes because everyone reads the notes. Thank you so much for reading the notes. That Logan Webb is like the tower guard to tier one. Mm. Like, you need a display that you have my floor while also showcasing you can potentially be a 30% strikeout guy. And if you can't do that, you're not getting past me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, but it. Logan Webb is not going to be in tier one because he doesn't have a slider that is going to miss bats. He's tried a lot. We've missed it for ages. It's not there. And we see like 7 innings, 5 Ks, right? Like, that's not enough. 5 Ks in a given night is not tier one, right? That's disappointing. If you have a tier one guy, you only get 5 strikeouts. So if Zach Gallen or Kevin Gausman are going to get back there, they got to showcase that they have Logan Webb's floor and now are going 8 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts a game. So Max Fried, you got to work on that. You got to get there. And only got to do that. All these guys have to do that if they want to get into tier one.
So, yeah, Logan Webb is on that wall. Game of Thrones. He's just there, protecting, watching.
Yeah, he's a crow.
Yeah, I do want to point out Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who you talked about in the notes, mm-hmm. also asking him politely to please just throw his fastball
very loudly
upstairs.
Too.
Yeah, it was in all caps. Yeah, we've mentioned so many times about like what happened to Kodai Senga at the like beginning of last year, and that guys who play in different professional leagues have to adjust to a different baseball, a different league, different hitters, different country, different everything. And sometimes it all doesn't click at the beginning of the year. So like the Twitter conversation I read where somebody was calling him expensive Lance Lynn is like, we need to just exercise a little bit of patience. Oh, it hasn't even been a month right now. I understand this guy hasn't come in and set the world on fire, but right now, if you really look at what Yamamoto is doing, I really think the only real issue is the location of the fastball, considering the fastball itself is pretty much an average pitch. And so if he locates it better, the rest of the arsenal can carry a lot of weight. But people look at like the 450 ERA and they're like, oh, what a waste of money. And I just think that we're so quick with these judgments. And if people in your leagues are feeling like that about Yamamoto, like, Nick has him ranked 15th. I still have him inside my top 20. Like, get him if people think that he's some sort of fraud. Like, it's just not the case.
So small pushback in some ways. I mean, I think you're right. Like, well, we do see a lot of adjustments. I think the attitude is rooted actually in his compadre, Shota Minaga, because Minaga is someone that we wish casted, saying, yeah, you're going to throw this upstairs, mm-hmm. right? And he actually did. Like, he's been so absurdly good at locating this upstairs, no adjustment necessary.
Their demeanors are so different on the mound, too.
Yeah, and what's wild to me is, like Yamamoto's four-seamer, it really could be like Imanaga's, is the thing. Like, it is a very, very flat attack angle, which is what you want, right? The HAVAA is beneficial to throwing upstairs, massively so. Mm-hmm. And he's actively doing himself harm going middle and down. The big difference, though, And I think this is actually the root of the problem. I don't really think it's that Yamamoto's adjusting. I think it's a Dodgers thing. Well, this is something I brought up with Eno.
Well, because you mentioned it with Pepio last year.
Exactly. And we saw it with Bobby Miller. And we said, well, they got Glasnow. Like, Glasnow actually had like sub 10th percentile high location last year. And we saw it with Walker Buehler too. So this is something that I don't know if it's going to get fixed as much as to like Imanaga. And the thing about Imanaga that's so freaking cool is that he's just nailing it completely. The other element of Yamamoto that's a little weird is the cutter and the slider aren't really doing anything. It's been a really good curveball for him. The curveball is saving his season right now, in my view. The splitter sometimes arrives and is good, but what do you know? It's inconsistent. What? No way. Same thing, honestly, if you're Imanaga, every other game, it's like 10 whiffs and then 2 whiffs. So it really puts more of an impetus on the four-seamer to be elite. And I got to say, guys, I know we're upset a little about Yamamoto. He's not doing so badly. It's not like disaster after disaster for Yamamoto. So it's right there, and it's a gift that he has this shift that could just happen overnight and bam, then he becomes incredible. And I have to imagine over time, like it does. And I'm excited about it. But I do think there's more than just Yamamoto adjusting. I think it actually is instruction where the Cubs actively said, do this, and they're doing it, you know. So, well, with Imanaga,
yeah, I appreciate that pushback. I do think, you know, I still do believe in the patience that I was addressing, but yes, your point about Yamamoto, because we mentioned this all offseason with Pepio, it is a Dodgers thing that we knew, and hopefully they can adjust. And so, we'll see. You mentioned Imanaga a bunch, he starts off tier three, which number 19 showed Imanaga. Number 20, Logan Gilbert. Number 21, Jared Jones. Number 22, Sonny Gray. Number 23, Chris Sale. Number 24, Dylan Cease. Number 25, Jesus Luzardo. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
Well, so before I get to that, what is the name of the list this week?
Yeah, I was stalling.
Because, yeah, well, I'm not going to let you do it anymore.
Yeah.
So Manel Blanco is the head.
Is the head? Yeah, but I didn't know if you wanted me to.
I mean, it's up to you. I mean, I'm stalling more, Eric.
I still want to go. Then I still want to go Queso Blanco.
Oh well, yeah, okay.
Because yeah, I do love some Queso Blanco.
And yeah, but that's the name of one of the tiers almost. Queso.
Mode of transportation.
No. But like in the notes, it's Queso, which is mediocre cheese.
Okay. Like
all right. Fine. All right, so Queso Blanco, there you go. And the one for this tier, this is tier three of guys who are hoping to become AGAs. They have the strikeout rate to do it. It's just about the consistency to really be that, right? So I'm going to call this the hydrogen car. We know how good it can be. It does seem like, I don't know if you're going to get there, but like we all know how absurd these guys could be as top five upside.
Okay. I have another rant I'm going to go on, but before I do that, I do want to ask you about Jesus Luzardo, who is up five spots into this tier. And I was surprised that he was up a little bit because it has not been a great start, right? On the surface, we have the 6.58 ERA.
Oh my gosh, it's a 6.58 ERA. Jeez.
Yeah. swinging strike rate is down. Strikeout rate is down. Walk rate is up over 5%. The ICR is down, which I guess is nice. And according to PLV, his pitches are grading out better. But the results haven't been there. I'm a little concerned about the walk rates right now, paired with the lack of swinging strikes. Not concerned in the sense that, like, you know, I would be looking to get rid of him or have him much lower than you do, but I'm surprised that he went up. And so I'm curious what has you still with this much confidence in Luzardo as like a maybe one day he's an ace.
Yeah, I mean that's a great thing and a great question. And honestly, it's so fascinating to me. And there is a small rant that I have. I'm going to tell you that rant after this break. So guess what? I get my rant in first, Eric.
You do.
And it's about utilizing, you know, ERA and WHIP and a lot of rate stats now, this is probably what you were going to talk about too. But if you just look at Luzardo's games, right? He's been great for three games, including one against the Cubs. And then two have been terrible. And who did he face? He faced the Yankees in Atlanta, mm-hmm. you know, and that was it. That's like the bad starts that you've endured with Luzardo. I've called him the premium cherry bomb. He is somebody who is going to flex a 25% to 30% strikeout rate. He should not have a 12% walk rate by the end of the season. Right now, looking at these things, yeah, we have these weird samples and they're just going to inflate or deflate numbers all the time. You're going to see it with Bryce Miller later where it's ridiculous sparkling ERA and whip. And it's like, well, yeah, he has an 89% left on base, right? While Luzardo has a 60% left on base, right? This is what happens when we get these super small samples. Mm-hmm. What I am seeing are his slider and four-seamer generally doing its thing as command goes. Last year, I think we saw a lot more that were hittable inside the zone. And, you know, at times he's obviously still made those mistakes. Like he has actually a higher mistake rate this year. But I think those were more for the tougher opponents. He kind of just is that guy who's going to be hovering that like 3.5, a little bit higher ERA, I think, throughout the season with like a 110, 115 whip, really 115 whip, but like 25% to 30% K rate. And that's just kind of who he is. I really debated actually putting Luzardo at the end of this tier or at the start of tier five. If you go, you guys watch the stream, I do it 2 p.m. to usually 6 p.m. Today was 7 p.m. I said it out loud being like, is Luzardo in tier three or tier five? Because tier four, he doesn't fit. And I'm still about grouping. I'm just still like that. That's just how I work with this stuff. Either you are that ace potential that we think actually can get on that streak and do it, or you are that sturdy, I don't really think you're an ace in tier four, but you're going to be like that concrete rock for me. Luzardo FL was just enough over it, and I put him in here. I have no problem with anyone that wants to put him at 31.
Right. So, fully agree with you on using ERA to evaluate pitchers. It was more just as a discussion of like,
oh yeah, no, absolutely.
The beginning of the season hasn't gone great. Here's my concern with Luzardo, and it was why I had him a little bit lower early before the season started.
Yeah.
I think that maybe he belongs in that tier of guys starting in 31. I don't know that he's an ace. I think that we've been dreaming on the upside of him for a couple of years. And I think that he showed us with Miami, there is upside that he flashed in Oakland and we never got to see because of injuries and whatever. And he's been a very good, or he's been a strong fantasy starting pitcher in Miami. I just don't think there's another level that we have yet to see. Mm-hmm. And I look at starts like, you know, you mentioned that he only had two really bad starts. And while that's true, like 3 runs in 5 1/3 against the Angels is not particularly good. I mean,
yeah, and that's fine. Two, it's a 113 whip and a 25% right, carry in that game, one run difference.
But that's like, to me, that's better than fine, but it's not great. And I kind of think that's who Luzardo is. Like, I don't know how many of those like really dominant starts we're going to get. Where like I think that he's a guy who gives up 2 runs in 6 innings with you know 7 Ks as his like, hey, that was a really good start. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But you're talking about a guy who, in my opinion, and again, this is my perception of him based on his game logs and what he's doing. And it's this year, missing fewer bats, lower strike rate, lower zone rate, higher walk rate, like just command in general is a little iffy for me on him right now. Where I look at a guy whose best start might be like a 3 ERA with 7 Ks in 6 innings. And that's like one of his really good starts. And then I don't know that you're getting like, oh man, he just went 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts and 1 walk.
Yeah.
Like, so to me, that puts him in again, like I'm talking about the low 30s. So I'm not saying like don't roster Jesus Luzardo. I'm just saying I don't have your faith. Well, the upside that's there.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't have him as an ace. I have him as ace potential. Essentially, he's just saying that, like, you know, there is an extreme that does say, hey, look, he goes on that run. Really, it's pretty simple for me. It's 2022 and 2023. ERA, if you combine that 279 inning sample that you get essentially like a 3.4 ERA, 3.4, 3.5. And you get about a 112 whip in that time. And you have about a 29% strikeout rate. And the guy I've seen in 5 starts this year is pretty much the same guy. I don't really see anything swaying me in the games I've watched with him. It's the same kind of thing. Like, yeah, he does make some of those mistakes with his slider or his changeup. he actually said the changeup has been a little bit more inconsistent than I normally see, but the fastball is there for the most part in the same way that it has been before. And I'm with you that, like, I remember seeing him in the top 25 for some people and stuff. I think we're both low on it outside the top 30 for the Zardo. Mm-hmm. As injuries have happened, he moves up because yep. I look at all of tier four, like, he's going to have a higher strikeout rate than all those guys. I mean, it's pretty easy for me to say that. And if you want the, you know, if you feel like, hey, I'm going to get much better ERA and whip than those guys, then like, all right, yeah, then fine, go for tier four, go ahead. But I don't really see a reason to say that he's massively different at the moment. So yeah, sure. Jesus Luzardo is there.
When we get to tier five, I'll tell you a guy who I feel like very similar about, like what I would get out of him.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
My rant was just about the Pirates' handling of Jared Jones.
Oh no, not more of this.
Well, I just thought it was funny after what happened tonight, because they said his last start, he's going five.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. He's going five. So right. He threw five innings, had 59 pitches in five innings, and they yanked him. Tonight, he threw 70 pitches in five innings. And I even messaged you and I was like, that's pretty efficient. That is a pretty efficient evening.
Oh, yeah.
You know, chalk it up. Another great start for Jared Jones. And then I looked out and they let him go a sixth inning.
Yep.
And he went and he got to like 92 pitches on the day, I think was the total. So what is the difference start to start? Why one start did you say five innings? Because we're resting him and he's going to go just five innings no matter how many pitches. And then less than a week later, he goes five innings. It's 13 more pitches than he was the time before. And now you're going to push him to 90. So are you letting him go when he's been efficient in his outings, or are you not letting him go? And are you
it
right at five? It's just, it doesn't make sense to me. Have a plan or don't have a plan.
Well, I feel like they have a plan, but the plan is five innings this time, six innings next time.
Right. I think the plan was five innings this time. Oh, wait, we're tied 1-1. Let's get him another inning.
Well, it was a close game last week, too, to be fair.
That's true. And their bullpen blew that game.
Right. And I don't know. I don't know if that was the case here. I think it's all nuanced, right? I honestly, my whole take here is that, sure, it was five innings and 59 pitches and got pulled. Let's say he was five innings and 75 or 80 pitches. No one would bat an eye. Everyone would just be fine with it. Everything's cool. Yes. Great. We got this. Everyone's happy. He's great. Right.
I think it was the arbitrariness of like saying innings, not pitches, regardless of how many pitches at.
I'm with you there.
Seemed to make sense, especially when the next start, you basically just throw that whole thing out.
I guess I'm just not thinking much about it. It's really like, all right, Jared Jones is dope and makes us feel dope. Sometimes he's going to go five innings. He's going to be annoying. So he'll go six, another one.
You don't
the Pirates
react
are
going to
be weird and they're going to do this, and how they want to handle, you know, babying their starter. Right. I don't know. There's all these different philosophies that people have now about how you do it. I'm very much about stressful innings, but it's going to be what it is. And we start them out there regardless. I don't know.
I mean, you don't react as emotionally as I do. So for you, it has no, it didn't have a fantasy relevance.
Okay.
So
okay. Everybody listening knows that I have the things that I care about.
Right.
Okay.
But it's not the mismanagement or the. I'm big on logic.
This is just like a mystery that I can't get. You know, everyone has their philosophy with this that I can't just like say like definitively this is what's going to stop them from hurting him or not. And I want him to go 11, like eight innings every time or something.
I spent like 11 years as an English teacher teaching argumentative writing, and so when something is illogical and makes no sense, it just drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
Crazy. Drives me crazy.
Yeah.
What doesn't drive me crazy, what drives me crazy is some of these guys in tier number four. starting with number 26, Bailey Ober, number 27, Michael King, number 28, Joe Musgrove, number 29, Nathan Eovaldi, and number 30, Justin Verlander. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
This is the cheese bus.
Okay.
It's a big boy. You always know it's going to work. Like you go through school and you're like, oh, it's a cheese bus. I'm going to get from point A to point B. Is it the sexiest one out there? No, but it gets it done. And you're like, yes, I can rely on the cheese bus. That's what my coach used to call those yellow school buses.
Sure. Some seats have some springs that are visible loose in there, but yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. You can even hear it.
You can. All of these guys moved a little. Nobody moved massively. Is there anyone in particular that you want to address, either why Eovaldi and Verlander are up a little bit, Musgrove's down a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the I think the interesting one to me is Bailey Ober, actually 26, because he's only done well since the first game of the year, where, of course, there were these massive reactions. I was like, guys, he's fine. It was weird that he did that. And what do you know? Two runs in the last three games. Here he is minus one. What the heck? Well, it's because I think he doesn't have AGA material. I don't really see him as a potential 30% strikeout rate kind of guy, right? I see him as that six inning solid strikeout an inning. It's called the Bailey special for a reason. And I realized that tier three all had that extra gear that they could possibly hit. I know we just talked about Luzardo and stuff, but we also have seen some ridiculous stretches from him as recent as last year. And there is maybe that potential because he does have a 30% strikeout rate at times, right? So Bailey Ober, probably not. And I felt that this was just me kind of calibrating it all, being like, look, tier four, these are the guys that are not going to be that 30% strikeout rate. But man, you know that you're not going to likely drop these guys. Maybe Joe Musgrove falls into tier six. Maybe so does Justin Verlander, or maybe even Eovaldi, if they're really showing some sort of degradation this year as we continue. Mm-hmm. But Michael King, I do feel very strongly about as a command guy. He's going to go six constantly, has a really good sweeper, good changeup. And, you know, Bailey Ober kind of fits that mold.
Yep. King and Ober were both people who like had bad command starts earlier on. And we were
weird. It's just like, that's not who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big mover starts tier number five. Ryan Pepiot up 15 spots to number 31. Garrett Crochet, number 32. Bryce Miller, 33. Blake Snell, 34. And Tanner Bibee, 35. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
Well, this is the jetpack tier. Because you feel like this thing is going to hit and it's going to be great and you're just going to soar into the sky.
But sometimes you just, those videos where like they're over the water or they just go.
Yeah,
right,
this investment, you know, we've been still waiting for jetpacks to exist, right?
Sure. Can you guess who the guy I was like this? I feel like if I start him, I get what I get when I start Luzardo.
I mean, it's either Blake Snell or Tanner Bibee. I can't decide which one.
It's actually Garrett Crochet.
No, that's not right.
It is.
wrong.
In the sense that right. I thought about Blake Snell. I really did. Like that was my initial reaction. And I think there's a lot of similarities. I mean, Garrett Crochet in the sense that like, I think Crochet has, we've seen legitimate upside. Like we've seen like, man, he is missing tons of bats and his pitches look good and crisp and he's on a team that's probably garbage. And so we don't know how many wins he's going to get, but also in any start, you're just like, I think I'm going to get a good version of him, but it wouldn't surprise me if I got a pretty mediocre version of him on that particular night. And I kind of feel the same way about Luzardo, not in the sense that their profiles are the same as pitchers, but in the sense that I think they have raw swing and miss stuff that you look at and you say, oh man, this pitcher is really good. They also don't have the best team context. And they also have a lot of games where, and I understand Crochet is a very small sample size as a starter. So when I say a lot of games, we have a very small sample to work with, but where you're just like, oh, I didn't actually expect it to go as poorly as it did. And now I have a pretty mediocre start in there.
Yeah. So would you say that I've Garrett Crochet properly ranked right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, within the tier. Yeah. They're like
32. I'm Bryce saying.
Miller, but yes. In that tier.
Okay. Yeah. So like, let's say it's like 34 or something. You think
Garrett because Crochet. I know what you're thinking in putting him ahead of all the guys in tier six. And so the question is, do you have him in tier five or do you have him in tier seven? And I think he belongs ahead of the guys that are in tier seven.
Okay. So the reason I say that is because, well, you have Garrett Crochet with a small sample size of like four games doing this.
Yeah.
And then you have Jesus Luzardo like 2 years of doing this. I would very much rather have the guy who's done it for 2 years.
Sure. So then so
that's why like I say, cool, then great, Garrett Crochet is in this tier and Jesus Luzardo is in the other one.
Well, what's the Blake Snell argument of it all?
Well, the Blake Snell is just like, I was thinking that you were seeing someone who just, you know how good he can be, but also when are we going to get this kind of thing?
But that's also kind of Luzardo, no?
I would say with Snell, there's at least more of like a, like Snell is so much more extreme than Luzardo is. Luzardo, I call him the premium cherry bomb because it feels much more pendulum swing every time. While Snell is like, it's painful because this could happen for like 2 months.
Yes.
And then you're there, but then you're just thinking about those 2 months, the 4 months later. But when is it going to arrive? And is it going to be as good as this? And like,
yeah.
I feel like every week he's just going to go down a little bit more. You know, he has to. Like, I can't just all of a sudden, it's like June 15th and he hasn't done it, and I just put him down to 70 or something like that. And the next week he's amazing. I put him back up to 50. I can't do that.
Exactly. Right? But that's exactly what he did last year, right? Like,
he's done for like 3 years now. 2021, right. He waited until June. 2022, we wait till July. And then 2023, we wait until, I think, May 15th. You know, it's, oh my gosh, drives me up the wall.
Yeah. I get that. Any of the other guys in this tier, you feel like you want to add anything?
Pepio is, it's weird. Pepio actually didn't showcase the best command with his changeup and his slider. But like, I'm really starting to believe, like, yeah, this is it. He's got the four-seamer upstairs. He knows that. His changeup was supposed to be better than it was last time. It feels very much like, yeah, this is working. And that's great. It's kind of fun to see. Like, I was really actually kind of out on Pepio because I was trying to get in my own head. Like, I thought, like, oh yeah, it's so obvious. He's going to throw high four seamers now. This is great. And I actually remember distinctly talking to Vlad Sedler, like, back in October or something, when he was still on the Dodgers, to be fair, and being like, oh, Pepio should go for Pepio. I'm like, no, man, like, it's just the changeup is too inconsistent. Like, way, you know, the four seamer isn't good enough. And all of a sudden, he gets straight to the Rays. I'd even say in the tweet, being like, I don't know if the four seamer has that much going for it. And people are like, really? You don't think so? I was like, wait, am I like missing this? And then I'm like, oh, if he gets this thing upstairs. And then it actually panned out. And I was looking against myself. But now it's like there. Changeup should be better than it has been. Slider's good enough. Like, this all works. And the Rays are going to score more. And it's going to be great.
And we did that dance together in the spring of like, we both had him high. And then you were like, oh, but he hasn't actually done it yet. We just think he might do it. And then he started to do it. And you're like, okay, we'll go back, you know, and you.
Yeah, right.
And so I've actually found myself with not a lot of shares of Pepio, and I'm fully bought in. And I think if you have him, great. And if you can try to get him, get him.
And I was, I was like, well, I don't know if it's going to be there. And it's two really bad starts to begin the year. I'm like, I kind of just, there's so many other guys we're interested in. Let's go for that. Yeah. And oh boy, he pulled it off. Good for him.
So good. we got a long tier number six. Starts with number 36, Chris Bassett. Number 37, Jose Berrios. Number 38, Nestor Cortez. Number 39, Aaron Civale. Number 40, Brian Baio. 41, Cutter Crawford. Number 42, Yusei Kikuchi. Number 43, Jordan Montgomery. Number 44, Ronel Blanco. Number 45, Christopher Sanchez. Number 46, Casey Mize. After this break, you tell me what this tier is called and why it's called that.
So Eric beat me to the punch. You know, he got the ad break. Congrats. Everybody, let's just applaud for Eric, you know? Congrats, buddy.
1-1. 1-1.
1-1. All right. all right. So with tier six, this is the tier of Hollies. And I'm trying to think of like, the, you know, the interesting transportations that would be just, it's there. You know, you enjoy it. It takes some work. Right. This is a little bit of a squeeze to really have the discipline to stick with all of them through the year that, you know, will turn out very well in the end, but you'll see some exciting things at times where your guy is kind of a little bit boring. And that's actually the snow day red wagon, where it requires the parent to drag their child in the wagon during the snow day as they hold on to their sled. Okay. And that's what this mode of transportation is.
That's a tough mode of transportation.
Yeah. But it's so enjoyable. And you look back and go, what a day, huh?
What a day. One day, my dad, in the blizzard of 95, we had a Land Cruiser. My dad tied a tube to the back of the Land Cruiser and drove down the streets of Lower Manhattan, because there's just nobody out on the road. And I was just on the tube, inner tube, in the back of this car. Oh, it was so much fun. It was an amazing time. less amazing has been watching Nestor Cortez, who seems to always kind of like have one bad inning at the start or at the end, but he's up 21 spots for you.
I mean, he killed it twice now.
And yeah. It seems to be possibly coming together. Pump fake aside, you seem to be buying back in.
Yeah, the four seamer is looking right where it should be. Finally, the cutter is looking great too. Winning ball club, it's all. I mean, I look at the rest of the guys in this tier and Cortez showcasing some strikeout upside while being like closer to the 2022 guy. Like I've been saying like, oh, Nestor's not really showing that upside anymore. I don't know if it's there. And then all of a sudden it's here. I'm like, oh, whoops. So Cortez, yeah, I mean, I do want to emphasize it's always about the other guys around, right? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like Nestor Cortez is SP 38. But then I see everybody else and all these injuries, all these guys that are not there. And yeah, okay, Nestor Cortez is SP 38.
Fun fact is that the voice Nick did is an imitation of the fan who yelled out to the umpire today.
It was Yankees actually. Yeah, thank you so much.
Got Aaron Boone ejected.
Oh my gosh.
There are a lot of interesting names in here. Obviously, you named the list after Rono Blanco. I feel like maybe you should say some words about
it. Yeah, it is strange. It's just plus one, right? You're like, what? Why is Ronel Blanco the guy? Honestly, I had my doubts about Ronel Blanco. I was aggressive with him last week also because of the national start. He wasn't that impressive in the national start. But I felt like I needed to give some sort of tip of the cap that I hadn't given of saying like, look, I saw your no-hitter. I thought it was too good. Like, this isn't going to be replicated. You're also going to have fatigue after it. Also, Verlander's going to come back and you're the odd man out. That's what I've been told. And now it's the Rangers and you did it again. Great. And then you dig out the Rangers again and you survived. And like, at some point, I got to say, okay, cool. You can actually do this. Yep. And sure, even the last start against the Nationals, it wasn't his best, but it was still good enough and he took advantage of the Nationals, right? And I have to be like, yeah, okay, Blanco, like, I want you to get recognized right now, even though you only have a plus one. You deserve this.
Yeah, I fully agree. I did my who's that guy on him after week one, and I was like, he's not going to be long in the rotation, and his changeup is good, and it's a new pitch mix, and he'll be solid, but he won't be this good, and so you may get rid of him after a couple of games. And also, you probably shouldn't start him against the Rangers, and that none of that has proven to be true.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And it is what it is.
But that's what I said.
You get some things wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. The I think there is an interesting lesson we've had about like always chasing that SP6. Because I mean, look at it this way. You see like Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock. I mean, obviously Whitlock is not in right now because he's hurt, but even in the preseason, we're like, oh man, we like both of these guys. And cool, like health permitting with Whitlock, like Houck actually we thought was the SP6, and that's working out well. Yeah, like Reynaldo Lopez, we don't know if he's going to get it there. He gets it. Jared Jones is killing it as the SP6. He gets it. You see Ronel Blanco here, who is on the outside, but you don't really know how it fits in. But then all of a sudden, it just fits. You know, there it is. It's
Spencer
great.
Turnbull was an SP6, wound up being super useful at the start of the year.
And Luis Gil, who actually finally just turned it around too, is that kind of thing. The Reese Olson, Casey Mize stuff. I mean, obviously Matt Manning, sure. But like, there you go, Matt Mize and Olson. It works. Like, I certainly am guilty of this, of seeing a guy get an opportunity and saying, well, he's going to get replaced or something along those lines. Yes. But don't always assume that there isn't something weird that happens, and it happens a ton more than it used to right now. And I'm certainly going to try to incorporate that next year.
We talk about that a lot of like, you know, yes, it's not a best ball league, right? You're not playing for the end of the year. But I understand that like when it comes time to do waivers, you're like, okay, I don't want every starting pitcher I add to be, I'm adding him for the next week. And then who knows? But also sometimes like if there's a guy who looks interesting to you and you don't know how long he's going to be in the rotation, maybe still add that guy, because if he gets length in the rotation, then it's valuable. And I was intrigued by what Blanco was doing. I wasn't going to start him against the Rangers regardless, because it had just been one start and I wasn't sure. Right. And I didn't know how long he was going to stay in the rotation. But there were leagues where I could have paid, you know, obviously like he had a tremendous first start that he was going for a lot of money, but in waivers. But theoretically, you could have put a fine, but, you know, modest bid in for him, kept him on your bench for the Rangers start and thought, I'm intrigued. I want to see what happens. And then you would have had him to say, oh, this looks really good. And so, you know, there are some guys that are on your list later that I did do that with, because I was like, all right, I'm going to try to learn from this. And I don't know if they'll wind up being Ronel Blanco, but maybe they'll be usable guys for a month, 6 weeks, 2 months. And that's still better than not on your team.
Value now is like three times worth value later.
Yes.
it's something ridiculous like that, because we have no idea what happens in 3 months and who else is available. And we talk about every year the number of players that you get off your wire during the year that are just so valuable.
Right.
And we're seeing it again once, even more so, you could say, this year.
Yeah. We'll get into tier number 7, which starts with number 47, Reynaldo Lopez, number 48, Edward Cabrera, number 49, Reed Detmers, number 50, Tanner Houck, and number 51, Mackenzie Gore. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
This is the helicopter, because it seems like on principle that this should really, really work. That's it. That's all I got.
That's it? Okay. But it could be horrible.
I mean, there's like excitement to it, but like, you know, they make a lot of noise with these guys, but it's like, it's not always the best option, really.
It could be a horrible crash.
Yes.
Edward Cabrera's command was a little worse in the second game than it was in the first one.
Yeah, the still, curveball was 11 for 25 strikes. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Can happen.
But we still believe in the ultimate upside, and, you know, one good command start, one bad command, or one fine command start.
So one amazing command start. The first game was insane. True.
Yeah,
it was true. And he showed up with a slider. We didn't know he had a slider. Right. It was like four seamer curve fastball really before. And all of a sudden, I'm watching this, go, what was that 89 mile per hour pitch? What was that? You know, and he's spotting it beautifully. And like, what? You have a fourth strike pitch now? And everything was at least 60%. Actually, only one pitch was a 60% strike rate. I think actually it was that slider. Everything else was way above that. And I was just watching this going, who is this dude? Like, this is amazing. This is like an ace right now I'm watching. Mm-hmm. And then the next one, okay, that became actually, you'll get this. Edward Cabrera did not actually locate the slider that well. It was really upper half most of the time. He threw 13 sliders. Guess how many strikes he earned and guess how many hits he allowed on that slider?
I don't know. I don't remember.
13 out of 13 strikes,
yeah,
and zero hits.
Okay.
That's incredible.
It is.
Oh my gosh. And yeah, he's not going to go 11 for 25 strike rate on his curveball. Like, that actually was, I think, his most sustainable pitch last year. Maybe it is. Maybe it was a changeup. But those two were like the pitches, while the four-seamer is the one that disappeared against the left-handers. But whatever. Like, I think this is so much better than what I've seen before from Edward Cabrera. I'm very excited about this.
Yes, me too. And I'm still excited about a lot of the other guys in this tier as well. It's pretty, just overall, a tier that I want to be a part of. Very tiny tier. Number tier 8.
Yes.
Starts with number 52.
Before you get to those three, though, hold on. We got to talk Reed Detmers and Mackenzie Gore. They both got minus 7.
Sure.
Yeah, Reed Detmers, you might be a little surprised because he had a decent enough start. The fears that I have expressed about Detmers are that his command is not as excellent as we want it to be. And we started to see it in this one. I think he got kind of fortunate with a lot of this. Slider was not well spotted. This is a pitch that is normally the thing that he needs, and it's not quite there. Fastball was half and half, and curve is like sometimes there, sometimes not. Changeup was floated a ton. This is the worry I have with Detmers. Against a better team, I think that this would have been punished more. And I don't know how sustainable his current run is. Mackenzie Gore, same kind of thing, where like it just wasn't, like everything was just off. Even if those Astros, four-seamer was not as dominant upstairs. It didn't really get upstairs as much. Slider is not clicking as much. And I'm like, oh, I believe in you long-term. I just also hate the fact that he gets the Dodgers next. And I say it as much as I possibly can. I saw somebody last week be so upset at me. It's like, Nick, you have him at 44. And now you're saying that you are okay dropping him. And I said, well, I'm going to hold on long-term. However, I don't want to start him against the Dodgers.
Right.
And that means that you're holding Mackenzie Gore for 10 days right now in April and without getting a start, right? That is a long time. Any pitcher that you are benching for after a start, if they're not like a de facto, you know, they are going to pan out, then you should be considering them as a drop. I'm not saying you should. But if there's a plethora of options on your wire that are helping you now, then yeah, it's no guarantee that Gore's going to come out of that and be great. So even though I like where he is, but
you're talking more in like 12 team leagues than obviously
100%. I'm always talking in 12 team. Default is 100% 12.
Nick, you and I both kind of operate 12 team
Oh yeah.
Default.
All of pitcher list default 12 team.
It's only three team. Well, it's only three guys in tier eight. It's number 52, Marcus Stroman, number 53, Reese Olson, number 54, Jack Flaherty. What tiny mode of transportation is this tier?
Also would be the unicycle, because whoever does it swears by it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, of
I
course.
I do swear by Reese Olson right now. Maybe not swear by, but
you're a fan.
I am a fan. I think he's good. I think him and, like, you know, I was gonna say it with Casey Mize above, like, I saw people post their ad drops in NFBC leagues where they dropped Mize because they had picked him up because he had a solid run of starts and then they got rid of him. And, like, I think these two guys deserve to be on rosters. I think they're pretty good and I like what they're doing.
I'm actually very surprised that I think both Reese Olson and Casey Mize were streaming victories for me this past week. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, honestly. Like, Casey Mize is a, just completely forget everything you know about Casey Mize. Okay. Like, it's rugs or whatever you want. And Mize is throwing four seamers that are really good now. Two starts were a little bit weird. I mean, the first one was even delayed and all, that was all kind of weirdness. And he had, I think, a tough matchup or something. But then he did well against the Rangers. And then he did well again over the weekend. I think that's right. And it's four seamers inside the zone upstairs. Sliders that actually aren't doing everything that it should yet. And that's the thing that's exciting for me. It's because the fastball is such a good foundation for Mize. The slider is going to be a much better pitch for him and should honestly get whiffs over time. Then you have Reese Olson, who has been reliant on the changeup so far this year. Then didn't have a changeup in the start, and that was really bad. But then he got his slider in his last one. That's actually supposed to be the really good one. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about slider, change, sinker, Reese Olson. I feel like that is another stable six innings for a guy. Like, I have tier eight and tier six, both as Holly tiers. I just feel that Stroman, Olson, and Flaherty each provide their own version of risk, right? Stroman is just not really a strikeout guy. Right. Flaherty's four seamers are just too hittable in the zone. And Olson's kind of a mix of the two, right? He's not as high of a strikeout guy as Flaherty, but I think he's going to be a little bit better than Stroman. I think he's going to have a little less volatility than Flaherty. So here you are, tier eight, Stroman, Olson, Flaherty.
And listen, if the Tigers move on from Kenta Maeda and we get Matt Manning in that rotation, whoo, doggy.
And then
it's going to be pretty nice.
And then Jackson Jobe, baby, let's go. I literally have him stashed in the Legacy League. I can't not have him. I just can't. I don't care. I know I just said three times value now versus later. I don't care. My staff is good enough. I'll survive these head-to-head weeks. I need Jackson Jobe on my team. I saw fast over the weekend. Okay. It was wonderful. I was thrilled about it. And I remember at one point he said, "Have you seen Jackson Jobe?" I was like, "Dude, I think," and before I can even finish, he goes, "He's better than Skeens." I was like, "I know. Yeah. I know. He's better. He's the best. He's got like four pitches. He's DeGrom. That's your DeGrom comp is Jackson Jobe." Oh gosh. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Let's hope that works out now.
The Grom cop, let's go. Got the Strider cop and Jared Jones. Yeah, who would Skeens be? Who's the ace that Skeens is?
The ace that he currently is?
Well, as in, like, we're giving comps to these guys, right? Yeah. I'm trying to figure this one out as I think or speak out loud right now. Who is the, is it Garrett
Cole?
It's
funny because I want like a more dominant, I guess he has a good fastball. As you say, I want a more dominant fastball, like a oh damn fastball. And Cole's, I mean,
it's degraded a little bit recently. Sure, right. Like Castillo, no. I mean, the thing is also Skeens' shape isn't as good on it. Right. It's like if Hunter Green threw more strikes, right? If Hunter Green actually had like a little bit better command. That's kind of the pulse.
Like that, people are going to be like, "Oh, that's not a great comparison."
No, but I mean, think about Hunter Green. Like, we know how good he is. How do you think he gets all those strikeouts? Those strikeouts, guys, is because he's not consistent with his stuff.
Yeah. We're going to fly through tier nine a little bit because I'm really excited to talk about a bunch of guys in tier 10. So tier nine is number 55, Nick Lodolo, number 56, Luis Gil, number 57, Hunter Green, and number 58, Carlos Rodon.
Look what it is.
What mode of transportation is this tier? And why is it Paul Skeens?
This one would be the kangaroo because it feels like this is going to be so much fun and great, but you have no idea where this thing is bouncing.
Also, I don't know that you can get on a kangaroo. They are feisty, man.
But if you do,
they'll come get you. Yeah. Is there anybody in particular in this tier you want to talk about? I know we've talked about like Lodolo and Hio a lot on recent weeks, and or should we get to some of these big names or these intriguing names in tier 10?
I mean, tier 9, Luis Hio finally showcased what he's supposed to do. The funny part about it is his changeup actually wasn't a high strike pitch. It was just four seamers and sliders. So hopefully he can improve on that. Hunter Green is Hunter Green. Nick Lodolo, I don't know if the changeup will be there that much and how good the fastball is, but the curveball is great. And Carlos Rodon, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do with Carlos Rodon. I really just don't.
I don't have a lot of confidence. I watched the start today too, and I don't know, man. I just kind of feel like I'm not seeing anything that suggests that he's getting back to old Carlos Rodon. So you're obviously not cutting him, but if you're in a league that allows you to trade, let's get some trades. Let's see if somebody will take
it. Like wants to buy an ups. I mean, today was 94 miles per hour against the Athletics. It was good. I mean, he went through and he did it, and like, maybe we just say that he's a Holly or a Toby and call it a day. Like,
yeah, I just think, you know, like,
he's
not hurting
your team right now.
Right. He's not. And if somebody's looking at the ratios and is like, oh, 270 ERA, like Carlos Rodon, and he's on the Yankees, and, you know, like, sure, take him. Like, you know what? I'll take Pepio. Like, I'll take Pepio from you and you can have Carlos Rodon and let's call it a day.
Oh, man.
Those are the type of things where, like, I know you might not make those trades straight up, but like, I would be trying to see if you could get a, you know, maybe you trade Rodon in a bat and you get a better starting pitcher who maybe narrative wise people don't necessarily value as highly because he's Carlos Rodon and he has a 270 ERA and he's on the Yankees and all the other stuff.
Yeah. It's a tier 10 though. Tier 10's the fun one.
Tier 10.
Woo, boy.
Starts at number 59, Mitchell Parker. What? Number 60, Jose Soriano. Number 61, Jordan Hicks. Number 62, Albert Suarez. Number 63, Gavin Stone. Number 64, Trevor Rogers. Number 65, Ryan Weathers. Number 66, Brady Singer. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
This has a really fun one. And we're going to talk about it after this break. You're going to like this one, Eric.
Oh, yeah.
This tier, tier 11, or tier 10 with Mitchell Parker all the way through Brady Singer, is the cruise ship. Because this sounds like a great idea. It sounds like it's just going to be in a wonderful 5-7 days, whatever, all expenses paid or whatever. But you might be stuck with it.
Sure.
And you can't get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean... There's three guys that stand out to me here. And I just think they're the three names that, like, you had Jose Soriano in the top 100 last week because he
100, baby.
Mitchell Parker, Jose Soriano, and Albert Suarez are the three guys who were like the most added universally across most leagues who were not on rosters before. I'm just curious your thoughts on these guys. And I'll tell you the one of them that was my, I don't know how long he's going to be in the rotation, but I'm adding him now because
Right. I can pretty much guess who that is. I really need to make this clear to everybody. These rankings are not rest of season rankings. Right. Not a best ball league, right? This is if I'm drafting today, who am I drafting in order? And it's so important, as I emphasized before, burn and churn is real in 12 teamers. And you have to really grasp for yourself, I'm going to go for something now, knowing that I have other options on the wire when this doesn't go well. And it's not worthwhile to just go like, okay, I guess this thing instead. Chase something for a moment, see how that is, move on, right? Mm-hmm. And that's such an important mentality for your 12-teamers. I do it constantly. I do it in tout wars. That's how much I do this, okay? And I stand by this. So Mitchell Parker is at 59 because of this. And he's above someone like Gavin Stone, who so many people were into, right? Are like, hey, we got to do this. But Gavin Stone? Yeah, you didn't even have your best pitch last time, which is your changeup, like the only good pitch. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long the Dodgers are going to let you go in games. It's going to be kind of a hipster kind of situation where you don't really know if it's that good or not. Meanwhile, Mitchell Parker shows up, goes against said Dodgers, throws a fastball curveball, it's, oh, wow, this is like, what, five innings or so of shutout ball? Cool. Then shows up against the Astros and features a splitter out of nowhere. They showed a graphic on the screen that was, this is what he throws, four-seamer curveball. And then he throws a splitter. It was amazing, right? Like, this was so cool. I had no idea he could do this. And this is also like a fastball at 91, 92. Doesn't look great, but good extension, good vert on it. So it actually does perform a little bit better. And this hook, let me tell you, I saw Yordan Alvarez flinch at this thing twice in the same at bat.
It's a good pitch.
It was cool. Now, I am getting ahead of myself because I'm not saying that Mitchell Parker is that guy. He likely is not. This was a day of, in both days, pretty solid command, lived in the zone a ton. They had no reports on him. They didn't know he had a splitter, at least the Astros didn't. And he plays for the Nationals. Like, he has a lot of reasons why this won't work. Mm-hmm. Still, he gets Miami this week.
Right.
You pick him up, you see how this goes, and then maybe he just keeps lasting, right? That's the whole point of this. You have Jose Soriano, 97 miles per hour on a sinker, and it's like Jordan Hicks is right underneath him, except he's got a curveball too.
Right.
Okay.
I love that curveball.
It's a great curveball. 42% of the season on start for Jose Soriano.
He's the guy I picked up.
There you go. Now, Albert Suarez is the other one. That is like 96, 97. We talked about in the spring. Oh my gosh, he did that. And then it would decline. However, he's now getting two starts this week. It's the Angels and the Athletics. We're going to see how the Angels one goes tonight. But if that velocity is still there at 96, 97, well, you know, you got a guy pitching for a winning ball club and throwing a good fastball that's upstairs. So like
with no options left, so he can't get demoted. He can only get cut or traded.
Yes.
Yeah. My thing with Soriano was like, I understand Soriano's swinging strike rate hasn't been great so far. Like, he's not missing tons of bats, but I see the shape and the movement on the pitches. And I also get that, like, as a converted reliever, the zone rate's not great. Like, he misses, you know, some spots, but I look at what he throws and I'm like, I like this arsenal and I want to see how it plays out. And I understand the team context isn't great. And I get all of that, but I'm also just like, I think this guy's kind of interesting.
And
I want to see how it plays out.
Had was one bad inning, the first inning, three runs against the Rays, and then one inning for five more innings. And then he did well against the Rays in the next one. And then he did well in Cincinnati. That's the story so far of Jose Soriano. Throws sinkers in the zone enough. He throws enough strikes with that and with the curveball. I'm like, all right, let's just see how this goes. There's another beneficial matchup this week. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I saw him like, okay, that seems.
Oh, it's Minnesota, I think.
That's why. Yeah, I was thinking Minnesota, but like, I feel like everyone is Minnesota this week. So
there is that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the rest of this tier is like Trevor Rogers, who had executed the Blake Snell blueprint, and it stinks. He'd be higher up if it wasn't Atlanta next. And that's just, that's annoying. But I understand you want to get into that. Ryan Weathers jumps up into this tier too because he just had his best start of the year by far.
But he also had Atlanta goal,
like 19 whiffs, 42% CSW overall. Four-seamer, sweeper, and changeup were all great. That's a huge deal. And then there's Brady Singer at the end of it. He's like, oh, hey, I lost my four-seamer. I'm like, okay, well, are you just the sinker slider guy we've seen for years? Or are you going to get the four-seamer back? So I'll give you one start to find out.
If that start was tonight, you might not give him another start.
Oh no.
It wasn't awful, but it wasn't great.
No, this is awful. Five earned runs in six innings. I don't believe that.
Sure.
Yeah. You should not. Let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to tier number 12. Starts with tier number 11. We're not skipping tier number 11. Sorry.
No way.
Number 67, Michael Wacha. Number 68, Zach Littell. Number 69, Clark Schmidt. Number 70, Seth Lugo. Number 71, James Paxton. And number 72, Spencer Turnbull. What's the tier called? Why is it called that?
This one, I had a good one for this and I've totally forgotten it now. This mode of transportation, right, is the wooden boat with a single sail.
Okay.
So it's like, it's creaky, it's moving, you're getting from point A to point B. It's not as dependable as the cheese bus. And you look at it and go, like, really? This is all you could get? That's this tier.
Well, okay. So not super enthused about many of these pitchers, but maybe more so enthused about Clark Schmidt?
So Clark Schmidt is starting to get better against lefties with his cutter. He already has all the tools against righties. I mean, every single pitch he throws is essentially great against right-handers. It's just about dealing with lefties. I think he's getting better at it. again, winning ball club. He showcased strikeouts. He took full advantage of the Rays. I think that we're starting to see a better version of Clark Schmidt. He gets kind of forgotten about, I think, a little too much. And for a guy that has that good of two breakers and a sinker he commands inside well, like, he should get more love. Well, like, Lugo honestly doesn't really have the same strikeout ceiling, I think, that Schmidt has. The interesting one here really is Spencer Turnbull, because there's this manager quote saying, like, oh yeah, when Taiwan Walker comes back, we're going to put Spencer Turnbull into the bullpen and we're going to manage his innings. I'm like, what are you talking about? Why are you managing Spencer Turnbull's innings?
I hate that so much. I hate it so much.
Why? He's not going to be on your playoff like run. He's in a rhythm right now. He throws a cutter and a sweeper. Sorry, a four seamer. It's a cutter and a sweeper. This is what Spencer Turnbull does. And you need to be in rhythm for that to work. You should be so thrilled that you're getting anything right now from Spencer Turnbull. And what you decide to do is, like, yeah, let's slow it down because it'll come back later. It probably won't.
And it's a new sweeper too. And we've talked about how guys that were throwing new pitches, it sometimes takes a long time to get that feel for it. And he's got a feel for it right now. And you got to cement that.
See, I ran about this. This is illogical. And it means that he doesn't start. And like, it's with Jared Jones, he's just going to start anyway. Like, whatever. He's going to do what he does. It's going to be beneficial. Fine. I want it to be more. Great. Now you're actually ridding me of that any joy. I don't like that. Okay.
No, Turnbull, you're ridding me of joy. some joy to be had in tier number 12. Starts number 73, Ranger Suarez. Great start tonight. Number 74, Brandon Pfaadt. Number 75, Jameson Taillon. Number 76, Luis Severino. Number 77, Jose Buto. Number 78, Martin Perez. And number 79, Javier Assad. What mode of transportation is this tier and why?
So this is the crutches, because you only go to these when you need them.
Sure, and you don't want them.
Right.
Ranger Suarez has been a little bit of a heater, though.
Yeah, that was the number one Reddit comment. There's always someone every week.
Sure. His Statcast page is Ruby Red. It's Ruby Red.
And so with Ranger Suarez, he's on a Vargas stool right now. 1.73 ERA, 0.77 whip entering this game. And he had a really tough matchup today against the Reds. And I want to really emphasize the fact that he had actually a surprisingly decent start against Atlanta to start the year. 5 innings, 300 runs, but 7 Ks and 4 base runners. But his last 3 matchups, Ranger Suarez, Nationals, Pirates, and Rockies. And it's just, okay, like, yeah, you play for the Phillies. You did good, 200 runs in those games, total 3 wins. Great. You've been executing enough, but honestly not as good as I've seen you. And you got the Reds tonight. And I'm like, yeah, this is just like, okay, it's boring. However, he's actually located so well tonight, better than I've seen, I think, all season did Ranger Suarez in this. Mm-hmm. And like complete pitch separation, cutters doing their thing up and into right-handers, changeups down and glove side, curveballs for strikes, sinkers inside to lefties. Like, this is premier Ranger Suarez. He probably read my roundup saying, like, I don't think this is going to continue. He's like, oh, I'll show him. You know, he never, of course not. Absolutely not.
He did say that.
Yeah, he did. Actually, he probably whispered. He's like, I'll show him. He doesn't get that emotional. He's smart. I thought Ranger Danger. Instead, he's living in the Ranger zone. And it's great right now. So maybe he does belong in that other tier now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of the list, though, is like we can make these little small changes.
You exactly. know what I mean? Yep. Oh, yes. Chris Paddock came through. Oh, my gosh. What a stream. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I just saw this. Like, oh, man. 7 innings, 10 Ks. Oh, 0 runs. Let's go, Paddock. There's your roundup for tonight. Oh, my gosh.
We will talk about Chris Paddock in tier number 14. I picked him up so many places because of that 2-start week.
Oh, man.
But tier number 13 before that starts with Hunter Brown, number 80. Number 81, Kyle Harrison. Number 82, Mitch Keller. Number 83, Tristan McKenzie. And number 84, Charlie Morton. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
This is the floaty you see in your parents' basement.
Okay.
Where they're like trying to get you to use it. And you really just like, I don't want to be seen in this. I don't want to go off into the pond and be in this bright yellow polka dot raft with you guys. That is not my idea of a good time. Right. And you can see that maybe there might be a moment in your life. Maybe it's like a pool or something where you're just like being ironic and you're in this thing and you got, oh, hi, here's my snappy snap with glasses and stuff. You know, I got my drink. But no, for most situations, you don't want to be stuck with this thing.
Yeah. Can we talk about Kyle Harrison? I mean, down 15.
Well, yeah, but you know better than that. You know better than the numbers after 70 or 60.
Well, that's true. But I just mean he was a guy who you and I were a little tepid on coming into the year. There was a little bit of like at the start of the year, okay, maybe we missed a little bit. I remember I in particular was like, ooh, if he's throwing this cutter that I'm hearing a lot about. And then that hasn't really happened. And I think it you know, kind of went south a little bit.
Yeah, for me, it was the changeup. The changeup started to actually look like it was a true asset for him. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing it far more than the curveball in his last two starts. However, it disappeared on him completely against Arizona. It was horrific. It went a 50% striker with just a 12.5% CSW. I just don't think that the four seamer is really the pitch that we want it to be. And that's it. Like if Kyle Harrison doesn't have this overwhelming four seamer, then that's it. You know,
that's simple. I agree. I fully agree with you. Chris Paddock is in this next tier. So let's get to tier 14, which is the final tier of this list. Starts at number 85, Jose Quintana, number 86, Logan Allen, number 87, John Gray, number 88, Dane Dunning, number 89, Chris Paddock, number 90, Keaton Wynn, number 91, Bryce Elder, number 92, Sean Manaea, number 93, Tyler Alexander, number 94, JP Sears, number 95, Lance Lynn, number 96, Andrew Abbott, number 97, Michael Lorenzen, number 98, Jonathan Cannon, number 99, Eric Fetty, and 100. Andrew Heaney, what mode of transportation is this tier and why?
Okay, so this, I remember this so well, okay? When we were a kid, there were these shoes.
Heelys? And
see, that's the thing. Everyone calls them Heelys. And they weren't, though. It was something else. And I can never remember what it is. But you popped out. I guess it must have been Heelys. Fine. Heelys. This is Heelys to you. I refuse to acknowledge that it was Heelys. I feel like it was a different name with an S. But it's fine. This is the Heelys tier because you gets you there to where you need. You know, of like, it's faster, but then you want to throw it away right after.
Yeah. You don't want people to know you have it.
Yeah.
But we got a good, so this is generally speaking your team of like your tier, sorry, of like streamers or guys who are going to be valuable this particular week and maybe not beyond, but maybe, who knows?
Yeah. Maybe it was a Skecher roller skates. Maybe that's what it was. It was just a Skechers. I don't know. Anyway, these are Skechers streamers Heelys for the week. And actually what's really helpful this week, guys, or this year, I'm a huge shout out to Josh Markinson who helped me make a spreadsheet for the list that tells me so many things. One, guys who are injured, who are back in the rotations, so I need room from the tables. Two, some of the prospect guys on my tables, if they're in, that's great. Three, guys who were not on the list that need to be mentioned in honorable mentions. Four, all of the starts for the guys currently on the list and those who aren't on the list with every expected start week. So I can look at it and say, okay, cool. For my last tier, I'm going to look at all the guys who are not on the list and who are the ones I would stream this week. Mm-hmm. So tier 14 are filled with guys who have matchups that are in their interest. Yep. Right? So Quintana has a two-step week. We've got John Gray against the Mariners. Same with Dane Dunning. It's actually Andrew Heaney at 100. We threw the BSB, even though it was against Atlanta. It was the Blake Snell blueprint. That is four seamers upstairs and secondary stuff down. And that's actually kind of cool for Heaney because he doesn't do that often. And maybe he can stick with that if he does get a start against the Mariners, even though Russell Resource says it's Jack Leiter, and I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
But yeah, I'm curious who really tracks your eye here.
I picked up Paddock in some places. I don't particularly like Chris Paddock, but it was a really good two-step, and so I wasn't going to pass it up. And as you mentioned, he did well. I mean, again, we're looking at box scores. We didn't watch the start because we're recording, but he did really well against the White Sox tonight. And so check one off there. I've been intrigued by Keaton Wynn. He's been somebody that's been floating around ads for me for a while. We've talked at length about Manaea, I still can't really do it. Lorenzen is somebody I've picked up in deeper formats. I didn't love the start this week, but you know, it was against Cincinnati, but it's at home in Texas, which feels a little better.
Yeah.
And again, we talked about how like Lorenzen's not going to knock your socks off, but I think if he's on a good team, that could get wins and
exactly keeps, you can go six innings, get allowed to do it. Yeah. So that could work.
And then Sears. I mean, we've talked about JP Sears a few times of like, there's something in there that's more than just, hey, I could stream him in the right matchup. Surprisingly good fastball, sweeper flashes at times. Like there are some pieces there, and he looked good against the Yankees today. I would not have, I know he had a two-step this week. I wasn't really going to take it because I didn't know how he was going to fare against the Yankees. And he did great today.
Yeah, it was, it's interesting with Sears because I mean, I took that into account. I could sometimes if I have an afternoon Monday game, I'm like, well, I'm putting on the list after that. So right, I can just ignore data. With Sears, I still feel it's, you know, he gets the Orioles this week. It's a low win chance. And we still kind of haven't seen him really execute that four seamer upstairs and then sweepers enough for strikes. Same with the changeup, like who he's supposed to be. He obviously made it work today. A lot of sweeper strikes today, decent four seamer upstairs. It worked against the Yankees. So hopefully that sticks. But then again, it's like it's Baltimore and he has the most upside of this tier, but he also isn't someone you really want to stream right now. So I needed someone else. I'm like, all right, fine. Sears, you burn this. Get in here.
You get in here, JP Sears. Get in here and you do it.
Absolutely.
Hey. What? Pleasure.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely.
Always.
The best.
I'm Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
I'm going to go look up what those Heelys were actually called.